All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the HTI2 Proposed Rule Task Force Group 1 meeting. I'm Seth Pazinski with the HHS Assistant Secretary for Technology Policy, and I will be serving as your designated federal officer for today. This meeting, as a reminder, is open to the public, and public feedback is welcome throughout the meeting, and you can make comments in the Zoom chat feature. Also, there is time scheduled at the end of our agenda for verbal public comments for anyone interested in taking advantage of that opportunity. So we are going to go ahead and get started with our meeting, and we'll start with a roll call. And I will start with our chair, Bryant Thomas Karas.
Present.
Shyla Blend.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hans Boutendijk.
Good morning.
Good morning. I did get a message that Steve Eichner will be joining us a little bit late today. Lee Fleischer.
Good morning.
Good morning. Raj Gadvarti.
Present.
Jillian Haney.
Present.
Joel Hartzell.
Present.
Stephen Hester. Aaron Holt-Coyne.
Good morning.
Jim Gerges. Mary Beth Carrillo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Kiki Loma Ashukintan.
Good morning. I'm present.
Good morning. Zeynep Sumar King.
Good morning.
Good morning. Naresh Sundar Rajan.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Thomas Wilkinson.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Is there anyone I missed or anyone who just joined?
Hi, this is Joyce Martin.
Hello.
Good morning.
All right, thank you. And now I'm going to turn it over to Bryant to get us started. Go ahead, Bryant.
Hey, Jim Gerges just joined. Sorry.
Great. Thanks. Better late than never. Well, thank you, everybody. Again, we have can you guys hear me okay? My audio just glitched out for a second.
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. So we have, again, as always, we have a whirlwind of topics to discuss. We have some slight changes to the agenda. You'll see in just a minute try to more logically follow the discussion, and we'll try to stay focused. And we have a timer established so that we can see how the minutes are clocking down and try to not get behind. So we have plenty of time for public comment at the end for the last 10 minutes. So next slide, please. And did you want me to run through the schedule, or is somebody on the ONC?
Brian, a more detailed schedule moving forward. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah, great. I was like, I don't see where the changes are going to be. So we will go on the subsequent slide. You'll see where the topical shift will obviously occur. And then again, we'll leave the last 10 minutes from 10 minutes till 1 for a public comment. So those of you who are not our subject matter experts who are on deck to assist in the discussion, or a member of the subcommittee, stand by for that, or queue up questions in the chat. And reminder to panelists to use the chat to everyone so that our guests can see the discussion as part of the public record. All right. Anything else, Seth?
No, we can keep going.
All right, let's move on. Reminder of our charge and the clock ticking down to during the 60 days, but we have a accelerated timeline, and that we have to have our committees recommendations put together in advance of a vote of the full high-tech committee. And just a update reminder, we do have a high-tech committee in 2 days on Thursday, and I'll be providing, along with the other co-chairs, an update on the progress we've been making. So if there's anything any of the committee members want me to convey for that, please let us know. All right. So here's our upcoming today's and the upcoming meeting. I will be out of town for the 20th, and I believe Steve Eichner, who has not yet been able to join us, will be a few minutes late, has agreed to take over the co-chair role to run through the topics for that day. Next slide. All right, and we're coming down to the wire, just a couple of meetings left. Next slide. All right.
And Brian, the next slide has the detailed agenda.
Ah, perfect. Next slide. All right. Let's get into it. We've got the 15 minutes queued up for continued discussion from last week. And then we're getting into one of the new criteria, birth reporting, which is F8. And then slightly transitioned here, we're going to do a birth report measurement or certification immediately after. So F28 will be switched with F22. And then we'll start digging in on the API, which that I'm anticipating that one may take more than one meeting, but we'll get that discussed as much as we can. We've allotted a full 30 minutes. All right. Next slide. I'm going to switch over to the spreadsheet.
We're moving on to the Google Sheet. Yep. I think Leo's going to do that.
Are you able to?
Yes. It just came up.
Yeah,
so will we be able to see the timer while the Google Sheet is displayed, or will that be off camera?
I think we'll be able to see it. This is trial and error here.
Oh.
You should have gotten a pop-up, folks, that like in the right-hand side of Zoom to add the timer to be in the right-hand taskbar. And then that way we can all see it. So you do need to be signed in, I think, into Zoom to be able to see it. So that if folks aren't signed in, that might be a reason.
Are you? Yeah, you may need to have a Zoom update. Okay. So I'm not able to see the Zoom yet on my old computer here. So I may need you to prompt me with countdowns as the clock started ticking.
All right, once the timer begins, it should display for all.
Okay.
So I think we can get it started.
All right, let's go into it.
And I can let you know, Bryant, if you don't see it.
So we read through the ELR last time, so we don't need to dive into that. But shall we kick off? Oh, there's the timer. But now I've lost everything else.
Okay, let me take it off.
Let me try a different screen.
I see a little timer in the upper right-hand corner counting down.
Oh, there. Now it is. Perfect. Okay. 14 minutes and counting. So, Aaron, you had some homework assignments. Do you want to lead the discussion on your thoughts or read your new proposed language? What proceed how you think is best?
I'm going to pull up my version so I can see it. It looks like the stuff that I added this morning is not there anymore.
I suspect the you just need to lower the make the square bigger.
Nope, it's gone.
Or the row.
It looks like it's gone. I'll just read. I have it in a separate document. I'll read it.
Okay, good. I'm glad you. So that a good warning to folks to as we're dealing with multiple editors at once, be sure and keep a copy of any comments you make in case they need to be re-pasted into the spreadsheet.
Yeah, and it's certainly possible I may have pasted it in the wrong sheet. I'll go back and double the wrong line. I'll go back and double check to make sure that was not.
Yeah, or scroll over to the side. Maybe it's in one of the other cells.
Oh, okay. Let me just read it.
Okay. Go ahead, Aaron.
Okay. So the first one was clarification of the intent behind the reference to LOI, lab orders, in F3, and how it relates to A2 is requested. So that was number one. Number two, if LOI remains in F3, language should be added to clarify its relationship to both lab reporting to public health as well as to the computerized physician order entry in A2, and recommend removing the reference to LOI in F3 if LOI is kept in A2. If the reference to LOI is kept in F3, then the following language is proposed. For laboratory tests that could produce a result of a reportable condition, all data elements identified in the LOI public health component should be included in the order so that the performing lab has all of the data to produce a conformant result message using the LRI public health component profile. Many jurisdictions require reporting of suspected cases of reportable conditions. In these instances where there is a suspicion of a case of reportable condition and where a provider or reporting entity may submit a lab order and aid in making a clinical diagnosis, public health would expect to receive an initial electronic case report for the reportable event from the provider or reporting entity, as opposed to receipt of an electronic laboratory order reported to public health by the performing laboratory or filler. The ECR report could contain the lab order communicated in the appropriate CDA entry in accordance with the EICR or ECR IGs, respectively. And then we felt that the transmission requirements should be updated. So update transmission requirements via update standards, HL7 version 251 implementation guide, laboratory results interface, LRI edition 5, as opposed to release 4. US realm with the date of May 2024, which is the most recent version, and to specifically call out the LRI public health component version 3. So I'm gonna copy and paste all of this and just drop it so folks can see.
Perfect. Do you wanna drop it into the section, the discussion section, which is a lot less?
Oh, yeah, I can.
So we won't have to scroll off the screen. We can see both at once. Thanks, Aaron. That was amazingly succinct and complete. One friendly amendment. I wonder if we should try to be future-proof and describe its inclusion in both the CDA e-case report as well as future FHIR-based e-case reports.
That's what I was trying to get here by the EICR, which is CDA, and ECRIGs. The ECR is the fire.
Which the ECRIG does mention the fire. Good. So it but makes it forwardly.
We could certainly clarify.
And for certain, for the next few years, CDA is going to be the most commonly implemented at state health departments. Beautiful.
There was another comment that it's not necessarily specific to lab, but certainly came up, I think, in some of our discussion last week regarding whether or not the laboratories have all of the necessary information within the system that is sending the result message. And so there was another statement, certification, and this is about certification. Certification should include addressing all functions and data needed to do business, e.g. report laboratory results, including necessary demographic and additional information, including data sourced from systems outside of an EHR that contain data required for inclusion to conform to the production of a complete exchange consistent with all the certification criteria. Probably in need of some wordsmithing, but I think you can get the gist.
So I love the intent there, and hopefully ONC folks, and is Jeff Smith on with us today?
He sure is.
Perk up your ears. So our intent there with that recommendation is that public health feels that the certification criteria on the EHR systems needs to go a little bit further into making sure that child information that may be in the billing system or may be in the LIMS system needs to be included in the real world testing, so that when these certified systems go into place at our clinical partners, they're able to fully transmit all the required components, even ones that originate outside of the EHR system. It's been problematic over time as we're trying to implement these messages that people will say things like, oh, well, the race and ethnicity is collected elsewhere, not in our system, so it's an empty field. Makes it really hard to have a complete picture of what's happening for situational awareness in the national picture.
Or inhibits the ability for public health to actually follow up in a timely manner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, especially when the excuse that we've heard often is that, the current phone number and address is collected by the billing system, not by the EHR system. So we don't have that in the lab. We need to call them for public health investigation. Please provide it.
Hey, Bryant, Hans had his hand up for a few minutes. I didn't know if you wanted to.
Yeah, go ahead, Hans. You're doing that, I'm going to switch to a different screen so I can see people's faces at the same time, or hands at least.
I'll put my face up as well. Couple of questions, and I appreciate the direction that the recommendations are going. Just a couple of thoughts on further refining it from an EHR perspective. The first one, clarification of the intent. I would suggest that we can go with the statement made in the second part, recommend removing the reference to LOI in F3. F3 is about reporting. So the order is already done. That should be dealt in another criterion. So I would just keep it simpler and say is that recommend that LOI is addressed elsewhere. And it is. And then in A2, we can talk about the variety of different ways in which LOI can be used. So I would suggest that we actually be more firm and combine one and two into it, address it in the A2, and then we'll come back to it. Generally, though, the thought is to that is described in there to focus on effectively a form of modular capabilities, focus on the LOI PH component that needs to be supported when you suspect that there is a need to report downstream. And there are a couple of other ones outside of public health reporting where LOI should be considered to be used as in a modular capability rather than a replacement in full. I think we can address that as part of A2 feedback. So that's the main comment on the first part, to combine and just have a singular recommendation. We move it here. And then on the other part is that may address in here as well. There's a comment that I put column over earlier today. It's in the column G, a variety of the pH focused criteria, as well as this one, include the filtering and validation requirement. And I think we have to be very careful about that. From an interoperability perspective, it needs to adhere to the standard. So assume that it includes all the data that's relevant and potentially some of the optional data as well. But it includes that. The function of validation and filtering on the data may very well depend on what you're trying to do with the data, whether you do or do not. And where validations exceed what the standard provides, we have to be cautious about that, because now we get out of sync between easily scalable, adoptable approach. So I think we want to put a word of caution in this, and but if we put out LOI, we don't need to. But in this one and any other one where filtering and validation is provided, to be cautious about what that means, because it's really now getting into the analytics, the capabilities that the other system needs to provide, that may or may not need to do any certain kind of validations, as well as the reality is that you have to be careful filtering things out and being required to filter things out or to reject messages based on certain validations, because that means that you're dropping out other data that still might be relevant. Real-world data is not perfect, and it means that the transactions will not be perfect. We need to make them better, but imposing that rather than having flexibility seems to be a strong requirement by the criteria.
I think the thing that I think is going to be a challenge for
I think we lost
other
Brian.
Folks Brian, I Brian's think audio
cutting out.
Brian, yeah, you're cutting out.
I was afraid I was the one cutting out from here.
Same.
Thank you.
Very like APHL, so it's going to be an interpretive dance.
Hey Brian, we have you back now, but you cut out for the beginning part of your comment there.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to give me a minute. If somebody else could take over the discussion, maybe Aaron, if you could lead a discussion with Hans for a bit, I'm going to switch to a different device. This is getting ridiculous.
Just as a time test,
go ahead, Molly.
Thank you, Aaliyah. Just about to say we're almost 16 seconds on this timer, but Aaron, you do have your hand up. So I think if we can have a few more comments on this, then we can wrap it up.
Hans, I appreciate your comment, and I actually really support being a lot more firm with regards to the specificity in combining one and two. My question is, it's always likely a possibility that there was something intended behind the inclusion of LOI here that maybe I'm just not seeing. And I don't know if that actually was the case or if it was just referenced because they go hand in hand. I just don't know. And so I would, if there was a legit reason for its inclusion here that maybe we haven't seen yet or haven't discussed or, you know, whatever. We should at least be aware of that, right? I mean, Molly, sorry.
Oh, and just to answer that question, Aaron, too. So this particular topic, the lab interoperability, took a slightly different approach in the criteria that included the transmission and then the receipt validation parse filter components. So I know we've gone through a lot of the, you know, F1, F21, it was the mirroring of that because of the inclusion of A2 as well. A2 includes the creation and transmission of the order adhering to LOI, whereas F3 is including the receipt validation parse and filter of the order according to LOI. So they were in that MPRM, those different actions were covered between A2 versus F3. For that clarification point, still very much appreciate your comments and needed clarification.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the concern from a provider perspective, is that there is a need to send a lab order, so A2 deals with that. And then the PHA has the receipt of either a lab order, if it's public health lab, or by way of the LRI or the ELR, it will get the data that came about to the lab to then forward to it. So I think we have to be very careful that if you're trying to describe in F3, and that's why we are very much looking at recommending and just do not include LOI in F3 because it's a provider focused. If there needs to be a lab focused on what the lab does, then let's not mix the two together because that's a different role than a provider. So that would then become a recommendation that create a separate criterion for a lab that is the receipt of a lab order that in turn the results might be used for public health, and then we go from there. Because otherwise you're going to require on the way it's currently phrased, it's going to require the provider's HIT to also receive an LOI and demonstrate that where there is no need to do that. So I think that's the crux, Aaron, that we are more interested to provide a little bit firmer recommendation, let that play out, but have that hand in hand with do it role specific, the criteria. Somehow some of these things are being mixed of a PHA and non-PHA, as opposed to recognizing it's a provider, it's a lab, and it's a PHA, three different roles that need to be played to make it successful.
I agree with that. I think clarification on the actors and the roles, particularly with this one and the need for the synchronization across all three, is important and critical, and I think it only helped make this more implementable in the long run. And sorry,
we're at time for the discussion for this. I really think that we need to, and maybe a diagram is in order, although I've never seen that diagram in a federal rule, describing actors in this, you know, trifecta situation, as opposed to the simplified concept that we heard of a pitcher and catcher. Things can get really complicated when there's a third party laboratory. Things also get complicated when public health agencies are acting as the laboratory itself. And that's, you know, that's another situation where the lab order itself may be being targeted or sent towards a public health agency, in which case we are in a lot more control over the mandating of certain ask on order or entry questions. But again, the LIMS system in a given state agency may not be capable of receiving some of that information that we so desperately want and need for our investigations.
I'd be happy to work with Aaron to do a little wordsmithing on the recommendation to get some of those things in and address the other one. Focus on lab as well.
Understood. Just be aware, Hans, there are, you know, we want to look at this as an opportunity to try to get those secondary actors up to speed. We know the LIM systems didn't get the same kind of infusion of meaningful use dollars that the EHR systems did. So this could be our opportunity to try to bring them up to the same playing field.
And I would certainly support that. After all, interoperability is a team sport, to make it happen. But it would be helpful that the criteria have clarity so that you don't overimpose on certain HIT to do things that are not relevant for the context that they operate. So I'd rather see a few more criteria, as we started to do right now, more obviously in this proposed rule of having a provider perspective, a payer perspective, a public health perspective. Let's not hesitate to have a lab perspective in there as well as a participant in that ecosystem. Mm. Those are the kind of capabilities that we expect from a lab system or from a reporting system to make that more clear. So I think we're after the same
goal. Good suggestion.
The question is how.
Yeah. All right. So we've eaten into our time. Let's, Aaron, are you okay with moving on? Is there any final wrap up on, or other committee members have any concerns with what's being proposed, barring a little bit of wordsmithing that still needs to be done?
Quick process question. How do you want to collaborate? By just marking up in the current highlighted cell or otherwise? Just to make sure how we do this.
Yeah, track changes is difficult in a spreadsheet, but
what we have done typically,
Aaron,
is in the past, we just put in the text and redline it manually. You still can visually see as if it's markup. It's a little bit more work, but it works.
Yeah, we could also use this last cell here for, you know, proposed finalized language.
Yeah, this is Seth. I would encourage, you know, as we start to transition the individual comments to work, you know, if we're having initial drafts of the workgroup recommendations, to leverage this column J and just put the proposed language there. And then we added some instructions at the top that if the text is in black, that means it's draft. Mm. And then as the group comes to consensus, we can mark it
green.
So, you know, at that point, then we're, you know, stopping the editing.
Good. Green is good. All right. Thanks.
All right. Should we move on to BERT reporting?
Yeah. So we've got a two part, 8 and 28, I believe. Let's scroll.
Yeah.
Do we need to scroll up first? Where are we?
F8. We need to go to first. I think it's scrolled down because we're looking at. There we are.
Can you see? I'm at row 10. Are you able to see F8 right now?
Yep, we see it.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. All right. Who do we have any subject matter experts on from vital records from CDC folks?
Yes, this is Joyce Martin. Paul, are you on?
Would you be willing, as a federal voice, to read the language? Oop, if we could scroll over just a hair, so the whole thing's on the screen. Perfect. That's Hans's comment. Can you scroll over to the language as written first?
To the middle column for Hans.
Oh, no, all it should be all the way over to my.
This one is left. A little bit shorter. So I think, yeah, I think it might be in F, that row. There's just not much. I don't think we have a ton of language there.
Sorry, I hit it.
Sorry. Yep. F is hidden, okay. But I think E should cover that.
Okay. Oh, shoot. That's why I my screen not all things. So if you could read column E, starting with number one, new.
Okay, stop me if I'm reading the wrong thing. New birth reporting, transmission to public health agencies, create provider live birth report for electronic transmission in accordance with the HL7 fire, vital records, birth, and fetal death reporting. Move to the middle column.
Great. Yeah, so we'll have Hans, you've got a comment there.
Correct. There's the comment that I made there is relative to the questions around inclusion of some of the other data into G20 that are relevant for birth reporting, and it raises a general question that is not unique to this one. When you look at G10 and now with the new one G20 with public health data, and they're both parts proposed as part of a base EHR, which means that you must, if you want to certify and be certified EHRs, you need to support all of that. Depending on the kind of EHR, specialties in particular, and the setting that you focus on, some of that information, particularly when you look at birth reporting, is not as relevant. In a hospital, yes. If you're EHR for geriatric, not as likely. So the general concern that we have raised, and this is another example of, that on the one hand, it's fine that G10, G20, those kind of categories, and you have A9 in that same category with CDA, CCDA, that there is an ability to convey and have access to everything. But only if the EHR or the system that you're looking at manages that. If they don't, we could create many different small criteria, one per or almost, and that's not very helpful, but rather have a construct that can say, even if the system only manages in a discrete structured, but mostly in a discrete fashion, such data, then it should be able to make that available if it's part of G10, G20. But if it only has that data at most in a document that it's included in there, it never needs to extract it and manage it separately, but it can view it, that's a different story. But if it doesn't manage it in that way as individual data, then why does it need to now create support and capabilities to do so for a setting where it's not applicable? So I think it's just a general issue that in itself, it would be nice to add these kind of things over time to G10 and G20. But birth reporting is another example of not every system will need to support that. So why are we covering everybody with that? Find a more elegant fashion to do that without having to.
There's definitely a track record or of modular certification, kind of a framework where only systems that need to perform particular tasks certify to that capability. So I'm imagining that birth reporting could be one of those that certification to, I totally agree with you, Hans. If it's a geriatric only EHR, pretty unlikely that they'll be doing any birth reporting. But if it's a full-fledged system like Epic or Cerner that gets used in a multitude of different systems or settings, absolutely it needs to have that as a built-in capability that doesn't require additional costs to implement. So I think we have to strike a balance and figure out how do we signal and ensure that those capabilities are built in while also working towards that F10 or G10 G20 that capability for a all-inclusive fire-based API approach. And we'll get to that discussion in one of the last section. I'm going to go a little bit contrary, Hans, in thinking that I'm not totally sure that the F8 criteria went far enough. I would have loved to have seen it be a complete vital records certification process where it was moving towards birth, death, fetal death, a more all-inclusive capability, signaling that you know the importance of that role in public health of monitoring, you know, who's alive in our jurisdictions and who has died and died from what in our jurisdictions. I think that becomes really critical. And if we can start to signal how important it is that we have these standards accelerated, we've seen signals from CDC in recent years that they're moving towards a fire API component for the national vital records system, beating that all the way down to our state and local capabilities is, I think, a good thing.
And if one were to do that, you then have to consider the same thing, is that within that one criteria, modular today from a certification perspective is that you have to do everything that is in the criterion unless the criterion happens to specify a choice. But in the case of G10, G20, it doesn't. You have to support all of them. But you have to then be careful that you then have those choices and what you actually manage. So, for example, for birth reporting right here, there is a specific guide that's around birth and fetal death, not the other vital statistics. So there might need to be another guide for other aspects. So I think you have to be careful. I was not arguing that it should be less or otherwise, but when you do these kind of things, we have to make sure that the criterion and the content is applicable to a particular IT system, and some that don't manage that, don't encumber them with that requirement because they need to do too much. Might be easier to do and consider around vital statistics. Perhaps there are different kinds of sections to it. So maybe there are multiple criteria, one or more, whatever. But when we get to G10 and G20 for public health, they become general buckets. And that's where the concern is the most.
Yeah. I can only speculate why death standards weren't included in this, and it perhaps is that, you know, 95% to 99% of birth records come from a birthing center or hospital based environment, whereas, you know, death reports come from a multitude of different, oftentimes non-clinical partners like funeral homes, etc. And so it may not be as mature of a landscape yet to include here. Others from the committee.
There's one other comment, and that's on the standard specifically, and I will have more details to come, but there is a concern that this particular guide is not necessarily quite scalable, and I need to get some more information around it, but just want to provide that input today. There's a little bit of a concern in reviews going on around the applicability, so that might be a question here for this group where there might be better insight. Is this standard proposed? Is that reasonable and appropriate to scale across all PHAs across the country, or is it still relatively specific to certain aspects? regions otherwise.
Aaron, as a co-chair on HL7, have you heard that concern coming forward that there's a scalability issue with 1.1.0?
I have not, though I don't.
Nor
if I would.
Maybe that's an EHRA hat you're wearing, Hans.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it from an EHR community perspective on these topics. Okay. And that's good. In that, that question is starting to come up, so that's why I want to create awareness. We are digging, make sure. But so that's why if anybody. Okay. Has concerns around that, that would be good to know. If not, then that would be good to know too.
Yeah. There's STU 1.1 has been out for a while. I would have hoped that concerns would have been fed back to propose improvements.
Yeah, STU 1, anything STU 1, whether it is a top line or not, is typically still fairly early on in the deployment. And this being fire, it would be very early on in the deployment.
Yeah.
Hence, if this would have been a V2 based, then different story. More likely.
Okay.
Fire is always a question with the first version. How widely has it been adopted and what's the scope? That's where we're hearing that. So we're doing a little digging.
Okay. Well, hopefully there's somebody from Oregon or Minnesota on listening public where I think some of those pilot testing of that standard have taken place.
Michigan is one
Lincoln. Of Michigan is okay. Is hopefully question- folks from those jurisdictions are on. Go ahead, Aaron.
Right, Brian. Just looking at Gnome's comment in the chat too, is the question whether or not we should be including birth here as opposed to focusing on death, and then whether or not it needs to be restricted to specific facilities, or I guess what's the desired outcome here? I mean, of all of the groups, at least putting my HL7 public health worker hat on, of all of the groups, probably besides immunizations that have certainly done their homework, I feel like vital records and statistics has been churning through standards development for as long as I can remember. They had a whole suite of 2 and 2.5 and 2.6. I think they had CDA versions. Now they're moving to fire. They're expanding that out to include the communications with medical examiners to death, electronic death registration systems to kind of back it upstream. But whether or not birth, it sounds like the question is whether or not birth is appropriate to include here. But maybe I'm misunderstanding.
I don't see that there's any...
Go ahead, Joyce.
Sorry, I just don't see that there's any question about birth being included here. The question was why death is not, and I'm afraid I can't answer that because I'm not involved on the death side.
Yeah. No. Well, I think Hans is concerned that the birth has a scalability issue, that it may not be mature enough to be included in systems. Nationwide, but Hans, can you speak for yourself?
No, that's the question, is that we are hearing some concerns around that, so we are trying to figure out how to formulate feedback around that, and that's from unless I say otherwise, I'm generally talking from an EHRA perspective, not Oracle specifically, unless I indicate that. So here the question is that is starting to come up in discussion that started, haven't finished that, is this guide ready for adoption at that scale? given the limited use of it. Yeah. That's the concern. And it's a question at this point.
And I think that, and, you know, kind of echoing back to our CDC colleagues, and I'd love for you guys to share with you what you can. F8, and then more importantly, perhaps F28, which we'll start talking about in just a minute, where the public health systems need to be ready to receive these fire birth reports. That's when I think the scale really will start to be possible, Hans, because I think you're absolutely right. In this exact moment in time, not trying to think about 3 years from now, but in this exact moment in time, there are very few public health agencies that can receive those new and improved automated birth reports, as opposed to the manually entered portal-based birth systems that most states are operating today. Yeah, but we're not going to get there unless it's a cart and a horse thing. We need the EHRAs to be moving in the right direction, and we need funding from the feds to modernize our infrastructure to be able to receive those.
Yeah, and just as a little bit extra color based on some of the notes, and again, we are following up, but it appears that this guide has been used with a couple of organizations, one EHR vendor, data that is not fully representative of what the guide enables, but what is in USCDI. So from that perspective, is that question of has it been sufficiently exercised? Field tested to say it is ready. And FHIR just creates that, in this kind of public health, always creates the extra question, if we build it, will they come? And should we spend more time priority-wise as a result on other things that we know that we build it and people will be there on the other side to receive it. So it's a purely prioritization maturity question. It's not a, shouldn't we get there at some point in time, but are we ready for it in this round?
Yeah, can we get folks from the CDC program area? Can you just speak, you know, factually, how many public health agencies have been involved in pilot testing this implementation guide?
A handful. I think it's absolutely the case that we're not ready. I'm concerned that, but we're close. And if we don't do this now, then it will be a potluck of folks implementing and it not being standardized, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So this is one that, so Joyce, is this one where there's a clear signal that this is the direction to go, but unlike the other systems where there's a, you know, a deadline that the old standard is going to go away in 2028, here's one where you know the flight path is going to be much longer, but
yeah, but it's going.
It feels like this is a right. That you are recognizing this is the writing's on the wall.
I think there's no question about that.
Hans, knowing that it's a field of dreams that we don't expect all the players to show up for, but at least those that are ready, willing, and able, and then we're going to need, you know, federal funding to enable that modernization to come, maybe not in a nationwide scalable time period, but in a bit by bit time period.
I think it's one of those questions that we generally have is that with these kind of new criteria, they are based on what external drivers are. Public health, they are not part of base EHRs, and so it then adds up to what do I need to do for the setting that I'm in. So the criteria itself, if you don't do this, then you don't need to do it. If it's not asked for, you don't need to do it. So for us, it's not as critical from that perspective. It's more the questions that were being asked with the relationship to G10 and G20, where then the data from this ends up in.
Yeah, make sure that they're.
That's more.
Yeah. Well, we'll. Yeah, we'll need to make sure that there isn't any customization done to, I hear you, to the F8 that makes it incompatible with G10. Acknowledge. Can we scroll down to F28?
I do just want to do a time check here. We are a bit over already on this topic.
On both?
Great question.
Did we use up both F8 and F28? I thought we still had time.
We have not F28. Yet, but we can restart the timer. We were about 2 minutes over on F8, so we can restart that timer now.
Restart the timer, but you can subtract the 2 minutes we went over time on the other.
Perfect. Thanks, all. Great conversation.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the other side of the coin on the exact same topic. And this is where I was already starting to drift into it, thinking that, I'll be honest, some states' vital record systems are constrained because they're a legal document having to do very particular things. So I think that the challenge we're going to have here is we can make these recommendations for certification on the PHA side, but some of these improvements may take rule or laws to change to get away from a paper-based approach. Can we get somebody to read the proposed? Ooh, we scrolled a little bit too far. Perfect. Again, someone from the CDC program area, would you be our voice of the feds?
I think I'm it. Establish new certificate criterion at 170.315 F28, birth reporting, receive, validate, parse, and filter accordance with the HL7 FHIR vital records birth and fetal death reporting.
Great. Thank you very much. I don't see any recommendations from you here, Hans.
No, this was on the.
Thank you for not micromanaging the public health side.
Well, I did make a general comment on filtering and validation across the board, which applies to this one too. Mm. But other than that, no, it's.
Yeah, filtering is an odd. I'll just be honest. Filtering is an odd. Term to be used here. I'm suspecting it was just used to be consistent across all of the measures or all of the rule changes. But if somebody's born in a jurisdiction, you don't exactly filter them out. But perhaps there's something I'm missing. Steve, or Ike, have you been able to join us yet? 9 o'clock. Were you able to join from Texas? All right.
It looks like he's coming. He just came on audio.
Okay. Well, we'll see if Texas has some thoughts. Any other jurisdictions?
Just a quick comment on your earlier comment about states struggling with the legal aspects of this. My understanding experience is that the legal impediments are typically with the items collected, mm-hmm. not with how it's collected, and with resources.
Yeah, the challenge is going to be that, you know, moving to a fire-based approach, if the particular data element that's required in a given state doesn't have a fire data element or bundle to accompany it, then how can they move to the collection via that mechanism? So I think there's going to be some, fortunately, fire allows for, local customization, but it's going to raise havoc on our EHR colleagues.
Okay. If I understand you, typically, it's not typically, it's almost exclusively for public health items. The states report according to the U.S. standard. Now, there are some variations on that theme, but for the most part, it's pretty universal. Yeah. And Good. We have ways to enforce that even more strictly if we so desired.
Good. So that's great to hear that the variation isn't as broad as we see infectious disease reporting criteria, for example.
It was... In earlier years, it's much, much less so now. We've worked hard to get it standardized.
Are there any reports on that subject in terms of what the gaps are or what outliers are still not totally in alignment?
Yeah, I'm sure we could come up with something for you. Most public health items that we'd be interested in here are reported consistently across states. There are only one or two, to my memory, that are not. But that'd the be, crucial so ones they, are.
And all those crucial data elements are included in the FHIR IG already?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, that would probably, if you could share those with us or with our Acela ONC colleagues so that we can reference them in our comments, that would be phenomenal. And I think, Hans, I'm hoping that would go a long way towards reassuring the EHRA community that there's some consistency across the country. So that there isn't, this is a much more doable expectation of what's to be included.
No, I certainly appreciate that part of it. Just the more they're aligned, the easier it is from a scaling perspective and addressing all the needs.
So to be clear, what you'd be interested in is maybe a list of items on the FHIR IGA that are not reported nationally at this stage.
Correct. Or if there are, if there's, similar to when the immunization program presented to us, they talked about how 98% of states have tested against a particular IG. Obviously, we're not in that situation here, but you could kind of describe mm-hmm. how the data elements that are in this IG are what's requested in X percent of states, and that there aren't going to be a lot of variations of
good.
Some kind of documentation of that will help reassure our colleagues on the vendor side that it's not going to be the Wild West.
Got it. We can do that.
Thanks. Yeah. It's not speculating if you're just reporting to us what exists in the world right now.
Right.
So thanks. Thanks so much. How are we doing on time? We still have
about 9 minutes, though we are about
minus two.
Yeah, minus two from Bertha. Then I know we went about 5 minutes over on lab, though. I was pre-planning on borrowing some of that from Syndromic since we had the first half of that conversation last week.
So any other, Hans and I have been doing a lot of talking. Joyce, before we move off of birth, so appreciate you joining us today. Anything else you'd like to say, or any other committee members?
I'm good, thank you.
Is there any, I'm going to, at the risk of eliminating our ability to catch up some time, is there any concern from folks that the fetal death reporting in any way creates controversy or legal problems for mothers and reproductive health issues across the country?
From an NPRM perspective, we did only propose the live birth reporting component. The implementation guide has both components in the name, but from a regular or from an NPRM perspective, we did only include live birth reporting and did not include fetal death reporting.
So it's in the reference standard, but that's not what you're proposing to measure or require. Okay, good. Exactly. Thank you for that clarification. Excellent. And that gets us away from controversy. Perfect. Thank you.
I just have to note that all states do report fetal deaths at 20 weeks. There's no variation on that at all. So it would certainly be feasible to do so. It's not a controversy as it might sound like it would be, but it is absolutely not at this point for fetal deaths of 20 weeks and greater. At least for now.
And are those are transmitted on to federal vital record systems for national reports?
Yeah, that's a different,
de-identified way.
Yes, but the fetal death systems are not always electronic at the state level, so that's a big challenge.
Long live the Excel spreadsheet.
Really?
That would impact public health being able to see.
Go ahead, Ike.
So that would impact public health's ability to receive it. Fetal death data, if they're not maintaining an electronic system of their end to receive it, that creates challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, it could be received electronically and then migrated to manual, but that again creates additional work and a change in reporting processes, probably.
Okay, I'm going to arbitrarily set the clock to 1 minute left on this subject, and then we're going to move on. So speak now. Are we ready to move on?
Brent, I love hearing someone assigned to kind of pull this part together, pull the recommendation together.
Put some draft language.
Maybe we
in
can
there.
Ask a volunteer.
Great suggestion. Steve, since you're late, do you have any ability, bandwidth, or interest in crafting up some language on the vital records?
I'd be happy to.
And then we can comment on it. Hans had some suggestions earlier in the F8, but we don't have anything here proposed for F28.
I would be happy to.
And I think you missed the discussion. Hans was hoping for modular on the F8 because not all situations, geriatric EHR systems are not going to be doing birth reporting.
To clarify that, is that if you currently are on EHR and on F8 itself, and you have no need to do birth reporting because you're in a geriatric setting, you don't need to do F8. But the question that it's raised in F8 about G10 and G20 to include data in that in those criteria, then that additional birth data in G10, G20 would become a requirement on other EHR. So the question on modular or manage the data and be certified to what you manage is really applicable to G10, G20 birth reporting, just add mix. So I'm happy that part of G20 that we put the comment there on the impact of including it there rather than on F8 itself, although the question is based in F8.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to a continuation of syndromic now, I believe, which... Do we have program area folks on? I thought I saw.
I can read.
Perfect. Thanks, Carl.
Yeah, sure. So establish new certification criteria at 170.315F22, syndromic surveillance, receive, validate, parse, and filter. That would support, enable users to receive, validate, parse, and filter electronic syndrome-based public health surveillance information according to either the existing or newly identified HL7251 syndromic implementation guide.
All right. So we're getting old school here for a minute. We're not talking about fire for a change. I don't see any recommendations from our committee in the discussion here. Is that because we're just good with this? Let's open it up for discussion.
Hi.
Hans, go ahead.
Yeah, the reason why I didn't put anything in there yet, it's a little bit more of a future-oriented topic, and Ryan, I know that you and I have been talking about this a little bit off and on in other areas. The question is that syndromic surveillance is adding additional clinical data more and more, understandably, mm-hmm. not an argument with that. And the format that's being used is a version 2 ADT message. And in addition, is that increasingly or different state jurisdictions are asking for identified data rather than de-identified data of syndromic surveillance. Yeah. So the question is that I want to make sure I stated it correctly because I know that we've had these discussions before. It's not that we or I are arguing that syndromic surveillance needs to be merged with, but rather that the format and the method by which case reporting is done, that there might be an opportunity to start to think about it. And this is not current HDI2, but we need to start to think about it to say, can we start to align it with ECR style reporting? Because that's much more suited to have that mix of demographic, clinical, and other data, the trigger events, et cetera, et cetera. The content is different. It's different purpose. But there are so many similarities. Is that why are we continuing to use an ADT message for what is effectively a short clinical record of sorts that's relevant and triggered based on syndromic surveillance triggers?
Yeah. So
comment and say, yeah, okay, latest version of the standard seems reasonable. But we need to start to think about the future.
Start thinking about the future. Yeah, so folks on the committee are getting some insight into heated discussions Hans and I have at Connectathons. And I think we even debated this or included some indications in our task force recommendations from 21 and 22, that exploration needs to be made in modernized interfaces and standards to ready syndromic surveillance as a methodology for an eventual potential phasing out of 2.x standards. So hopefully, I think, and we've got Jillian, we've got you on from CSTE, who operates the syndromic surveillance community of practice, and program area folks. Carl, your team's on and listening from the NSSP perspective. We do need to start thinking about the future. And, one of my feedbacks that I'll try to draft something up here so people can comment on it offline between now and the next session, is that even within this accepted standard, we're still kind of stuck in the transport mechanisms of old. Secure FTP as the required transport from the CDC program doesn't seem to be as modern and as resilient as it could be, given that we now have newer methodologies and infrastructure with QHENs and IHE standards being utilized by the majority, if not all, of our clinical partners who are submitting these syndromic surveillance standards.
Brian
has her hand up. Yeah.
Jillian, go ahead.
I agree with everything that you and Hans are putting forth. I think we do need to look forward, and I think there needs to be some careful deliberations, because syndromic surveillance is a little bit different from other public health data transmissions. I think we need to bring in some of the members of the community practice so that they can weigh in on this issue. I'd like to note for the record that, syndromic surveillance, it goes to the NSSP. Sometimes it goes directly to the states before it goes up to the NSSP. So, introduction of an implementation guide that would be more aligned with, say, ECR, for example, would have to have some very careful considerations around filtering in terms of what information is being sent up to NSSP due to privacy issues. So I think there needs to be a broader conversation so that we can move forward with looking at a new standard very deliberately and cautiously, because it is different.
Yeah.
And if I could add to
opportunity to be as identified or de-identified as well. So that should be addressable.
But say that again, Hans, you broke up at the start. Well, go ahead, Carl.
Just to add, though, the context for this criteria is the certification of public health systems. And while I fully agree that we need to find an alternative to ADT that FHIR holds some promise, the current mechanisms of bulk FHIR and subscriptions are not proven as a replacement for an all hazards approach to the surveillance. And one of the advantages that ADT has brought is that it is an in-place, readily available secondary use of healthcare data that FHIR hasn't been proven that FHIR can do that same thing as it stands right now. And I think that's also true when you think about transport from the QHINs and HIEs in this country too. The coverage and the percentage of penetration is not ubiquitous and doesn't necessarily, it's definitely a direction to move towards, but when you're thinking about trying to certify a public health system, I don't think public health can be the edge of the technological progress, right? I think, but I don't know. I'm curious to think what other, hear what other people think.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely, so I'd love to hear, and maybe this is an EHRA assignment, Hans, what the state of the art in patient registration in urgent care and emergency rooms is. Is there a fire replacement for ADT messages that's well adopted or has a horizon coming? Because I think what I hear you loud and clear, Carl, that this is not like case reporting where there's specific criteria that trigger an event and then the fire or CDA can be transmitted. This is something we want to hear about every single case that's coming in, and that free text of pre-diagnosis gets captured. And I don't know that there's a good fire-based replacement that I've seen out there yet, but I stand ready to be corrected.
Yeah, if you want me to react, is that I don't think there's anything particularly that we can say that's the syndromic surveillance equivalent of it. It's rather stating that there are some emerging and increasingly adopted methods like ECR that can generate CDA or fire, that whether the trigger events are manual or otherwise, it can contain a variety of data that seems to be increasing. The variety of data seems to increasingly be more suitable than the ADT transactions that are used. So I think it's much more of a future discussion that we can figure out, but to highlight this, that we need to start to think about it, because we are encumbering a flow and a transaction format and approach that's increasingly getting less suitable for what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
Stephen has his hand up.
Oh, thank you.
I'm just thinking about the transport mechanism, because it seems to me this is almost an outlier from all the other standards where public health has had the flexibility to select whatever transport mechanism it feels best suited to the environment. I'm wondering if we want to continue to support the use of secure FTP as the only mechanism, or whether we can look at a menu set of choices, or whether we want to look at recommending any transport mechanism, to your point of supporting different channels of getting data to public health.
Yeah, Carl, can you, speaking of what's technically possible now, is secure FTP really the only transport mechanism that your current NSSP infrastructure will support?
It has been the lowest common denominator between healthcare and public health. Healthcare runs primarily on NLM VPN based interconnections between, but that has always been a barrier for public health from the standpoint of firewall connections and permissibility in state government to establish private VPN tunnels in many cases. And so secure FTP became, the lowest common denominator. CDC deployed FinMS, and there's still a lot of FinMS that is in use.
I was happy to see FinMS was not in the rule. Yeah. That would have just hurt me.
it was a solution for the problem in its day. And yes, but no, so I don't know that there is there at present, to my awareness, a more viable alternative, unless the changing landscape of cloud-based hosted systems makes VPN a more permissible or that would be the only other thing to, from my knowledge, that healthcare would be amenable to in terms of a way to move that data. API and HTTPS was, FinMS was the guaranteed delivery HTTPS solution. So I don't know. That's sort of the state. And again, going back to the spirit of this was to allow public health to be certified to receive. And so,
yeah,
not trying to push the needle on that,
It does feel a little bit, I'm not criticizing here, but it does feel a little bit like a step backwards compared to everything else in the rule. It's an older school approach, and I hear you that it's a common denominator, but and this is where I'm wondering if we as a committee have an opportunity to say, the systems are going to need to be required to send secure FTP, because that we know every health department can support, and definitely the CDC can support. But other optional, maybe we can get a little bit, the other optional transport mechanisms, maybe we can make them a little bit better than optional, that we want to start to explore more sustainable and scalable approaches.
Yeah, because if we don't evolve beyond SFTP, that's where we're going to be.
Yeah.
And it may be a very good, consistent floor, but do we want to raise the bar and create a menu set?
I think we do. I guess my question though is, do you want to do that on the back of the public health certification part of it, or do we look to other parts of reg to do that in terms of more on the healthcare side? Like, because this is about requiring public health to support alternate transport mechanisms, right?
Actually, this is about the technology support, not whether public health has to do it. Just to clarify, because
okay.
It's to me, it's an ABC or an AB kind of choice, that public health as a program might have flexibility to request or require reporting in multiple in a different mechanism than SFTP. But if the certified technology is only certified to SFTP, that creates a potential gap where if it was certified to SFTP and something else, then public health would be in a better position to select or make available either A or B to the healthcare providers looking to report data. Mm-hmm. So it would be convenient. It would be convenient if there were certification criterion to a different transport standard in addition to SFTP.
Jillian, I know you're not the lead of the syndromic community of practice, but I'm wondering if somebody on the CSTE staff who are closer to the ground on this, and maybe through you, could be charged with gathering information, like how many states across the country received the data directly to the state rather than relying on MSSP as being the only recipient of the syndromic feeds. And we could perhaps
43 public health jurisdictions maintain or operate a local syndromic system.
Excellent.
Outside of NSSP, Carl?
Correct. Yes.
And is that states or that does that also
there's sites. So it includes like for instance in Texas and regions or individual counties in some cases in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not 43 states, it's 43 jurisdictions.
Sites, yeah, public health authorities. And then the balance, the remaining 30 leverage NSSP as their primary operational system.
Okay. Do we know what transport mechanism those utilize?
But even
some of them are probably still FinMS.
Yes, many are. And even in jurisdictions, though, where they're leveraging NSSP as their primary system, they still may use local infrastructure to manage the inbound receipt of data from their healthcare facilities. So
it's not a
one to one there, but yeah,
but no, it's a good question. So how
the landscape is pretty much FinMS or SFTP. With I know some jurisdictions do have some VPN connections that they've established. And there's a smattering of health information exchanges that are leveraged as well, which is a different game. Large, like Iowa for the whole state, for example, is a single health information exchange.
Yeah, same with here in Washington. So it is a crazy quilt of different standards, which drives our healthcare partners a bit crazy. But I worry the unintended consequence of this rule only specifying secure FTP as required could have a negative impact that when people go from a 2015 certification to a 2025 certification, they'll only support secure FTP and will actually, lose some of the modernization that's occurred in jurisdictions that have leveraged infrastructure that was funded by meaningful use and ONC.
No, I think including language around API-based transport would probably be a logical thing to do. It's not clear to me that is something that is widely in use today, but that doesn't mean we can't make sure the door is left open for it. I totally agree with that.
Any kind of survey reports, either from the community of practice, Jillian, or from the program that describes not just the common denominator, but what's possible across jurisdictions would be fabulous.
What's your time frame? And if feasible, Carl, you'll need to help me with the framing.
Sure.
Yeah, we only have two more meetings before we need to have things wrapped up pretty well.
Sorry to be the time stickler today. We're about 2 minutes over, and I do want to make sure that Jeff has the time to do a G20 introduction, and we can continue that into the next meeting. But I do really appreciate this conversation and Carl, you being on. I will note just here, the API capability is an optional component within the regulatory text here, as a note.
Yeah, so we may want to make a comment that like we've seen in other federal regs, that optional components could be made required in a given jurisdiction that was ready to exercise those options. In previous rules, there was language that said, the public health agency could specify the transport mechanism, for example. So we may want to pull some of that language forward from prior rules and make those comments here. Jillian, do you have much on your plate? Could you help to craft that and get feedback from your community? Go ahead, Jillian.
I'm not sure that I have the bandwidth, to be perfectly honest. I can try, but I really do feel like we do need to bring in the community to be part of this discussion. Is there can we have some more, can we utilize some more generic language about a need to look to the future and maybe punt it a little bit? just because I do think this requires broader conversations than what we can actually accomplish in the 2 weeks that we have left.
Yeah. All right. We'll come up with an assignee and try to figure out how to bring in those conversations. Maybe there's an NSSP meeting or a community practice meeting where you guys can, outside of this,
yeah, we
propose
can
see what we can. Propose some groundswell. All right, let's move on to the next section.
Quick question on that, if I may. Did we skip A2 for today, or was that totally done last week? Since we skipped Rose.
I think we did talk about it last week, but you were right that today we did not do a follow-up. So if we feel like we do need follow-up on that topic, we can add that to our ongoing list in our catch-all meeting that I think will be the 27th.
Okay.
Thanks, Hans.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Aaron brought it up a little bit but any one of these topics could have taken the entire session.
Just to highlight, I put a comment in there for whenever we get to it. Doesn't need to be today, but
okay. All right. So I think up next is the API G10, G20, and Jeff, I think we have you on deck to read or orient us to this language, please.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I'll read this and then we can go from there. So we propose a standardized HL7 Firebase application programming interface for public health data exchange at 45 CFR 170.315G20. This would extend the capabilities included in the standardized API for patient and population level services at G10. The new certification criterion would support ongoing and future development of public health fire IGs, leveraging a core set of existing modular and extensible capabilities and standards. We think there are a number of benefits that this certification criterion would bring, including help usher in and further facilitate a fire-based ecosystem that would support a wide array of public health data exchange use cases, streamline and reduce reporting burden for healthcare organizations and developers, while expanding public health authorities' access to critical data for action, extend the capabilities included in the standardized API at G10, as I mentioned, as well as require support for fire resources that are profiled in the US Public Health Profiles Library Implementation Guide. We think that this criterion would ensure that public health authorities have consistent access to discrete functionalities, defined capabilities, and standardized data from providers using certified health IT systems for a range of public health use cases, as well as support ongoing and future development of public health fire implementation guides, leveraging a core set of existing modular and extensible capabilities and standards. I don't know if there's a subsequent row there, or is this pretty much all we've got?
Yeah, scroll down a little bit more. I think that's it for what we had queued up for today.
Okay. I can provide just real quick a few additional lines of color here. So when we say that the criterion extends the capabilities and requirements of G10, this is part and parcel with a host of additional proposals that we've got to create modular certification criteria at 170.315J, which Group 2 is working through. And I would say big picture, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create a way to have consistency and modularity across all of our G criteria. And essentially the buckets that we are looking to, that we're proposing, is that G criteria would have similarities, if not the same, requirements for registration, authentication, and authorization, and then have specific G criterion specific requirements for information access and what we're calling API workflow capabilities. And in the context of G20, what that means is that this is, you know, essentially registration, authentication, and authorization would be the same for G10 and G20. And then on the information access, we articulate the use of the US Public Health Profiles Library profiled resources, as opposed to the US Core Implementation Guide. And then in terms of the workflow capabilities, we call out we propose that G20 would support subscriptions as well as bulk data access. And kind of in combination with the G10 certification criteria, you would also, a system that was hypothetically certified to G10 and G20 would have essentially the full suite of API capabilities, including subscriptions, workflow triggers, event notifications, et cetera. So I'll stop there.
So
I think that's probably as much color as I can provide.
Well, so let me ask you some factual questions, Jeff, about, does the public health profile library that's referenced in this rule, is that a similar to USCDI? Is that's a moving and evolving resource in that if hypothetically, if syndromic surveillance were to create a profile library and implementation for subscription to all cases that present in an emergency room, that there could be a fire-based, API-based mechanism that could be a successor to the classic ADT-based syndromic surveillance? Is that
so?
Hypothetically allowable under this framework?
I would say conceptually, the U.S. Public Health Profile Library's implementation guide is meant to be somewhat of a cousin to the U.S. Core implementation guide. So our intention with proposing the U.S. Public Health Profile Library's IG was to propose a public health specific data set of common data elements that would support various public health exchange use cases. There are reusable content profiles that are represented in the US Public Health Profiles Library that are, you know, essentially complement the US Core Implementation Guide. And there's a process, or at least there has been a process up to this point, and we anticipate a process of some kind would be moving forward to, you know, kind of ensure normalization or harmonization between the US Core and US Public Health Profiles Library. And again, some kind of process to identify when the kind of US Core version of the profile is insufficient for the public health use case, at which point the US Public Health Profiles Library implementation guide may be a place where that, you know, public health specific data element would be included. It's not dissimilar to, but I wouldn't want to give the impression that it is the same as USCDI plus public health. These two are separate, but certainly they're, and I think we do talk about this in the proposal, that we're very cognizant that they're of similar concepts. And so it's not infeasible to think that at some point in the future, if we were to adopt our proposals, that there would be a very close future development of the two.
Yeah. I can't believe we're already down to 3 minutes. Are there any hands up?
I can get my hand up.
Okay, go ahead, Hans. I see you're busy in the chat.
Yeah, a little bit, in the comments. So, a couple of comments. I did copy the birth reporting discussion around the impact on the G10, G20, copy it down here, so that it is in this context that we can further pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the question or comment beyond that, I want to repeat the other one, is that with the introduction of subscriptions and both in G10 and G20, that's currently defined as a very open end that you need to support subscriptions for all the resources in G10 and G20. And that is raising some questions around, well, to what purpose? And wouldn't it be more appropriate, and that's the direction that we are heading there, is to say, can we define a small set of use cases, subscription topics, that are commonly of interest, because depending on the context, et cetera, there might be a wide variety of subscriptions out there that are of interest. But can we define a couple of specific ones? And ideas range from let's define five and then certified software to that, implement at least three of them or something like that, or implement at least three of your choice. So keep that focus, because subscriptions is fairly new. Can we have a wide variety of ranges that might be very context sensitive and uses that are relevant? So start narrow and then build up. It's not much different in that case with analogy with the original clinical decision support requirements that certified software had to implement some as long as it was against a certain data set, but you did not have to implement everything against everything. So that will be more the gist of the kind of feedback. Be careful to create a large scope that you have to implement, and we really don't know yet where they are best used. So that's the suggestion. Narrow it, focus it, and then build from there. There's one already in prior authorization that needs to use subscription. Is there anything in public health that we could say that's a very reasonable general one, two, or three that makes sense that we have consistent subscription capabilities for? Or let people make a choice.
You can chime in regarding electronic case. Sorry, somebody else just
go ahead, Joel.
Regarding electronic case reporting, I have some concerns about the maturity of subscription for some of these purposes. It's a road we went down a while ago when we were developing the ECR Now app for triggering even. And I think for public health use, I guess from the public health agency side, leveraging subscription to pull a lot of the critical information, those business rules are going to play a heavy hand in it. I think the value is not just give me everything on this individual, but specific criteria based on the condition that takes it to a level that at least I have not seen subscription be an effective tool for. And so of those use cases, I have some hesitancy on the value for electronic case reporting to really push the value forward beyond where it's currently at until subscription progresses, I'd say. But I would welcome other thoughts.
I think that comment aligns and resonates very well with where we're coming from. It's unclear, so focus on some. And I think what I'm hearing Joel say is even if I translate into how we generally look at G10 and 20 combined, is let the implementer identify some key use cases, subscription topics, where there is a sense that it's very applicable, implementable, and then start to roll the ball forward and learn. Because doing everything across everything is it's the question is what are the rules, including that Joel provided.
Where is Joel? Where is the nexus of activity for the public health library and profiles? Is that something that APHL has taken on? Is that something that ONC is funding a continuation of? And how do we get more of public health aware and involved in that capability or that direction?
That is a great question, Bryant, and I will have to circle back to you on this. I know APHL is involved as far as how to pull others in. I will need to circle back on that.
And just historically, sorry to jump in here. Historically, this was funded through CDC, and Lantana originally helped develop the IG. There has been engagement through the HL7 public health work group on this. And right, Laura just put that in the chat. I think moving forward, it is something that ONC and CDC are looking to work on, just specifically to have more concrete alignment between that and USCDI plus.
All right. Well, we are, I'm 3 minutes negligent. Sorry, I was struggling to get my screen restarted and missed the countdown timer zeroing out. So let's open up for public comment.
All right, thank you, Bryant. Estelle, can you please open up our line for public comment? So just as a reminder, if you're interested in making a public comment, if you're on the Zoom, you can make a comment, use the raise hand feature, which is located on your Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're participating by phone only today, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And then once called upon, you can press *6 to mute and unmute your line. And while we give folks a few minutes to raise their hands, just a reminder, the next group one meeting of the HTI2 proposed rule task force is gonna be on August 20th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. And also a reminder, all the slides and agendas and materials for high tech meetings are all available on healthit.gov. Let me check with the SL team. Do we have any raised hands at this time?
No hands raised.
All right, seeing none, I will turn it back, Bryant, to you for next steps and closing us out.
Okay, so we are at the five minutes to conclusion. We've got a ton to wrap up in the next few weeks. We've got two more sessions just for our group. And then we enter into the sprint to the finish. The 3rd, 4th, and 5th of September is when we have to already have our language and comments for each of the components, F, G, and A criteria, logged into the spreadsheet and into a consensus green text, so that they can be brought forward for discussion with our sister groups, group 2 and group 3, who've been, you know, meeting concurrently. There's also some potential crossover. Some of you have been participating in some of those other groups, and there are some public health focused people who have been pulled into those groups as well. So we'll want to do our own homework and review what's coming down the pike in those groups, so that the 3rd, 4th, and 5th isn't the first time that we start to raise our public health concerns that might be needed to be addressed in those sessions. So we've got a lot to do in the next few weeks. So next week, prescription drug monitoring program is up, and Steve, I'm counting on you to lead that that discussion in my absence. And we'll have some federal colleagues on from CDC program area to help describe factually what the environment's like. Any last thoughts or volunteers for crafting up some of the syndromic language that's needed? Dead silence. Is my microphone working, Seth?
Silence is golden, I guess.
All right. I assume we cannot have a federal employee craft up draft language.
We cannot.
Is that all right? So
no,
but Carl, otherwise I would assign it to you, Carl. But
fair enough.
Jillian, let's see if we can get some input from the community of practice folks, and then you or I can pull that language forward.
I'll help as well. This is Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
And you got me too, Brian, to help.
Great, Hans. Yeah, I think especially for the vendor component of that transmission, that's huge. And I'd love to get some sense from your perspective. Is it jarring to have so many of the new transmission mechanisms modernized, and then this callback to secure FTP? Does that cause issues for implementations? Would be a great offline conversation for us to have.
Yeah, I'm not hearing that concern, because these are relatively quote unquote isolated capabilities. And okay, we have the full mix of capabilities typically available. So it would be nice if everything is the same, but it isn't. So,
all right. So there's already a laundry list requirement. Okay. Well, we're at time. I'm going to try to end and respect everybody's contribution. Thank you so much. We're officially adjourned.
Thank you.